Welcome back, gamers, to a new episode of the Uninformed Gamers Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Mason, or Rad Dreams from Rad Dreams Review, and joining me is Devin, also known as Darkness Tiger.
That's me. Hey, Mason, how are you doing today?
I am doing very well, a lot better than last week. So, funny story, listeners, we did attempt to release record and release an episode last week, but unfortunately there were technical difficulties, suffice to say. So we are back with a vengeance this week. We've got some new tech to help out with the connection issues and recording issues, so hopefully today will be a better experience.
I hope so, and I will say my apologies, Mason, because so basically what happens is, so for the listeners, this might be a little bit too much inside baseball, but I'm happy to share it with you guys anyway.
It's fine.
Yeah, it is what it is. Basically, whenever we start the podcast, we generally try to record at a certain time every single time. Sometimes it's later, sometimes it's earlier. When it's later or when it's earlier, it's fine. But when we record at this particular time, almost every single time, we will get about 5-6 minutes. I think this time was about 7 minutes into the podcast. And then I will absolutely just disconnect. And we've talked about this on previous episodes that I will just literally leave, rejoin and come back. And it's been a massive hassle. So we tried it. It did not work. And I couldn't deal with it anymore. So I'm actually this week trying out a brand new product. For anybody who's currently a T-Mobile user or who's well aware of what T-Mobile has, T-Mobile actually has a Wi-Fi, I wouldn't say a box, it's kind of like a Wi-Fi router. So you pay one low monthly price, and basically you can get 5G Wi-Fi directly to your house. So since I'm currently a T-Mobile, that's who my phone plan is through. For me, it's $30 per month, and it is unlimited Wi-Fi. And when I ran the data test to see like what kind of speeds I'm getting, I initially read that you should expect anywhere between like 50, like to just shy of 300 megabytes per second.
Mm-hmm.
When I ran my test, considering I live in a basement apartment, it was about 180 megabytes. So not bad considering that's what we're utilizing for this test. So hopefully it does not disconnect. I'm actually super excited. I've been using it for a week and I actually think it works pretty well. I don't put it on my consoles. I just keep it on my laptop and my phone. But so far, I've actually been very surprised and very pleasantly surprised by this.
Good. That's fantastic to hear. So with that being said, have you been able to knock out like any gaming or anything like that?
Well, not knock out any gaming because, again, all my games right now are massive. Assassin's Creed Valhalla, Starfield, Cyberpunk, Formula One 2023. Forza Motorsport, Forza Horizon. So 6 games. And fortunately, I am thankful they did not put Cities Skyline 2 on Xbox Game Pass, or else I would have 100% downloaded that as well.
Yeah.
Even though I hear it's not playing very well on PC.
Oh, that's not good.
Well, usually when you have like Sim City games like that, like simulation games that are that massive, it's kind of the expected way. When these games first come out, you're going to run into a lot of bugs. And almost everyone that I've talked to, almost everything that I've read, it is very buggy and they are patching it one at a time. Even the developer came out and said, hey, just kind of expect this game to not run perfectly.
Oh, shit. Wow. Well, I mean, at least it was transparent.
Yeah, but which makes you ask the question, why wouldn't you just delay the game?
That's a very valid question.
Because like if we're talking like Spider-Man 2, which probably going to be Game of the Year or at least nominated for Game of the Year, that is a game people were waiting for. That is a game like, hey, we need this right before holiday season. I don't know if Cities Skyline 2 was a game they needed to come out like right now.
No, not really. I mean, the same could be said for the Mortal Kombat 1. I'm not sure what NetherRealm Studios was thinking with its Nintendo Switch version of it. Like Ed Boon actually did come out and apologize for the Switch version of Mortal Kombat 1. If you know, you know. But for those who don't know, that game is a fucking train wreck on the Nintendo Switch.
it's what we like to call in the video game industry straight garbage.
Yeah, it's not good.
But it goes back to what we've been saying about the Switch.
Yes, it cannot handle those types of games. Like, I know that people want to have like your Skyrims and your Witchers on the Switch. I'm sorry, but the Switch just can't handle that game or those games.
The Switch 2, if that's what it's going to be called, is most likely going to be more adept to the current generation of consoles that we're seeing with the PS5 and the Series X.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I think, in my opinion, just based off all available information, and based off if Nintendo wants this to be a handheld, I think the next Switch is probably going to exist in the same realm as the Xbox Series S. Not the X. It's not going to be nearly as powerful because it's still going to be a handheld console. I think it's going to be the Series S is going to be the best comparison.
See, I'm going to play the devil's advocate approach and disagree. I think in terms of capability, the new Switch will be on the same level as like a PS4.
Okay. That's fair. That's very, very fair.
That's my prediction. Whether or not that will be true, who knows? But we'll have to play the wait and see approach with that.
So besides my internet troubles, besides my video gaming, I did go see a movie on Tuesday.
What did you see?
Well, remember how we talked about how some movies can just be a little too long to go see them in theaters?
Did you see the Killers of the Flower Moon? So how was it?
You know, I really wanted to like this movie. I really did. Mm-hmm. I really, really wanted to come here and say this is going to be best picture. This is a movie that you need to go out and see. But I'm not. I'm actually...
I'm sensing a big butt.
I'm going to give you a quick review. I'm going to say I struggle to give this a 3 out of 5. I'm giving this a 2.5 uninformed gamers out of 5. And it's not actually it's a multitude of reasons.
Okay.
One, it is based on a true story, which I'm glad the story is a story that was told, even though it was told in another movie. I'm glad there's a story that was told. However, when you tell a story from this particular perspective, which was the perspective of the, not the protagonist, but the antagonist. You're finding that for 3 hours and 20 minutes. For about 3 hours and 20 minutes, you were like, man, there is no redeeming qualities to this. And you're watching this for 3.5 hours. And the characters themselves, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, and... one second. Let me make sure I get her name. Lily Gladstone. The characters themselves, they feel kind of one-noted to me. Robert De Niro, I think, probably does the best. Robert De Niro, should probably get an award. They're not. Like, it feels like I'm staring at cardboard act for 3.5 hours. Oh, shit. Robert De Niro characters aside, I think he did a phenomenal job. It's just, I've seen better Leonardo DiCaprio movies, and that's what kind of disappointed me. If he even gets nominated for this movie, I will be surprised. I just did not love him in this. I loved him Wolf on Wall Street. I loved him in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I never saw the one that he did where he got attacked by the bear, where he got essayed by the bear.
Are you talking about The Revenant, right?
Yes, I never saw The Revenant. I expected it's much more from Leonardo DiCaprio.
It's actually really good.
That's what he got the award for.
Yeah, I saw Revenant in theater with my dad, and like the movie is Oscar bait. It is, but it is a viable movie, and it is a very good movie. And no, DiCaprio did deserve that Oscar. He should have won an Oscar for other performances that he's done in the past, but he's been snubbed for whatever reason. But I'm glad he finally got one.
Yeah. But I will say, you hit the nail on the head. I think Killers of the Flower Moon is Oscar bait. Do I think it should be nominated for one? No, I do not. Am I going to say you need to go out and see it? No, I will not. I will say if this movie streams and you have 3.5 hours one day to just sit and watch for free, I guess. But there was another movie that same genre of like oil, everything of the sort, that I think did it much better. And that was There Will Be Blood.
I'm sitting there and I'm such a fucking good movie. Daniel Day-Lewis?
Nah. Daniel Day-Lewis. I expected, that's what the kind of movie that I expected when I walked into this.
And DiCaprio's in that too, right?
Isn't he? I don't think he is. I think you're thinking of somebody else.
Who is in that? I haven't seen that movie in
quite a while.
Paul Dano.
That guy is creepy looking, by the way. I find Paul Dano unsettling looking.
He's a really good actor, and he doesn't get a lot of credit. Like his performance as the Riddler was fucking amazing.
Yep. He was also in the movie Prisoners, fantastic movie as well. He does do excellent movies, but just
unsettling looking. He looks very odd. Yeah, he does look very unsettling.
But what's been going on in your realm for the past, now it'd be 2 weeks considering.
2 weeks. Yeah. Not too much gaming really, but I fell down this rabbit hole and downloaded this game that's been popping off on like Twitch. It's called you might have heard of this, and I'm sure maybe our listeners have heard of this. It's called the Watermelon Game.
I have not. Have you heard of this? What is this? I have not.
Or it's called Suika, Suika. It's a Japanese game, right? And it started popping off here and there, like little small murmurs, and then it just kind of like blew up, and everybody and their mom is like playing it on YouTube. They're playing it on Twitch. So I downloaded it for $3 because why not? It's $3. Who the fuck cares? Because it came to the English electronic store for the Nintendo Switch. I was like, I'll give it a shot. It's basically like Tetris, but with fruit, honestly. It's a fun game. It helps pass the time. Like
it seems like
just
one of those games that people are
going
to get addicted to. It seems like a game people are going to get addicted to.
Yeah, and I've heard of people playing this, and they'll play for like hours on end because they're just like, I got to beat my score. I got to beat my score. So I downloaded that, checked it out. It's fun. I'll do a couple, rounds and then put it down because I don't want to sink too much time into it. But I also picked up the Metal Gear Solid Master Collection for the Xbox Series X. This is the Volume 1. And I'm very excited to replay the series because it's been since I was a wee lad since I last played the OG MGS games. So I'm very, very happy about that. And on a side note, there has been footage recently of the Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater remake that is powered by the Unreal Engine. And that game, that remake, looks absolutely stellar, and I'm very excited to play the remake 100%. It looks amazing.
Yeah, I saw that, and I'm glad you say it looked amazing, because I heard from other and read in here, quite a few people did not like the way it looked.
I don't know why. I watched the whole trailer. I watched the gameplay. I was like, this looks like leaps and bounds better than the original.
Yeah, but I guess the problem was Metal Gear Solid Phantom Pain was so pretty as a game that when you're looking at this one, it looks like it's a step backwards.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. I can see that, but I wouldn't draw a direct comparison to Phantom Pain. I don't know. I think people are being way too critical. It's a beautiful game. It looks amazing. Like, it doesn't need to look like, I don't know, pristine.
Yeah, I think that's just my thoughts on it. No, I get what you're saying. I think there's been a growing movement. I recall seeing that there was a poll. And the question was, do games need to be graphically superior to be good? And the vast majority of people voted no. It does not. However, people say this, but the second a game comes out that does not look like a graphical equivalent of 4K, HK, Ultra HD, they're the first ones to say, this game looks bad. This game's terrible.
Yeah, and they'll cry about it.
seeing so much criticism, almost every single new game that has come out, whether it's on the Xbox with Forza Motorsport, whether it's on PS5 with Spider-Man 2, I have seen people just being so critical. I'm like, can you just like just not enjoy the game? Oh, well, I think the developer lied. They said that we could do this. They said we can like walk in every building as Spider-Man. Okay, if you can't, are you enjoying the game? No, because they lied. I won't spend my money. People have become so critical in the video game sphere. And I don't understand. Like, yo, play a game, enjoy the game, have fun.
Everybody's a critic nowadays.
As we talk from this uninformed gamers podcast.
No, I know. And I give my you know what I mean. Like we are critical and we are critics of things, but like I think we do a fairly decent job of not being overly I guess anal about things.
Speaking of that, a game that we have mentioned multiple times on this podcast that we have none of us currently own. I know this for a fact. None of us currently own this game. Has just been delayed again.
Oh God, is it fucking Skull and Bones?
It sure is. Skull and Bones is delayed again. Honestly, at this point, I'm surprised the NDA is not expired yet.
Take a drink.
Take a drink, everybody. God. We mentioned Skull and Bones.
Yeah, who's got their bingo board? Oh, my God.
Since we're playing the bingo board, even though this isn't our story, it has been announced that Bobby Kotick will step down from Activision Blizzard next year.
Yes. Yes, in January.
Yep. After the integration with Activision Blizzard and Microsoft is complete, Bobby Kotick is out. He's gone.
Bye, Bobby.
All right, now let's get into our very first topic, Mason. What do we got?
All right, so a bit of a splash in regards to the competitive fighting game scene, and there's no easy way to say this. Nintendo fucked up again in regards to arguably one of their most popular franchises, and I'm speaking, of course, of Super Smash Brothers, and it comes in the form of basically any Smash game. So Super Smash Brothers Melee, Super Smash Brawl, Super Smash whatever. I forget what the most recent one is, but Ultimate? Super Smash Brothers Ultimate, I believe, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
But anyway, Nintendo has released new rules basically detailing how these events should be run and will be run in the future. And they have placed extreme heavy restrictions on the competitive fighting game scene, which has mainly been grassroots for years, since its inception, because Nintendo does not operate nor do they manage any sort of competitive fighting scene for these games, in which it's a lost opportunity for them, but for whatever reason they don't. And so the community, you know, fans, just normal Joes, have taken it upon themselves to do their own tournaments, to do their own events, things of that nature. Like Evo, for instance, has shied away from including Smash because of Nintendo's constraints. But let's kind of dive in to the new guidelines, which have been released for Japan, Europe, and North America, pretty much everywhere besides Australia, I think. I could be mistaken on that last bit, but, you know, don't quote me on that. Anyway, highlights from the new guidelines. So I'll cover a few. I won't do the whole document because it's a big document. If you are interested, there's a good article on Kotaku that kind of goes over it in detail, and you can access the document via a Google Drive. But the highlights include: they limit the size of registering fees to roughly 2,000 yen, which equates to $13, which heavily restricts organizers in, basically breaking even, because a lot of times tournaments don't make money or a profit off of these events. They do it. No, it's for a passion. Second, there is a limit of offline tournament size to 200 entrants or less, which is extremely paltry, very, very small. If you do your tournament online, however, the maximum amount of people that can participate is 300. Again, kind of small, if you ask me.
A little bit.
Third, there are heavy sponsor and monetization restrictions. You have to jump through hoops if you hope to get any sort of sponsor or any sort of monetization. And then lastly, there will be no cash prizes at all. These are some of the highlights.
My thing is what exactly is Nintendo trying to do?
So we know that Nintendo has a history of being very protective of their intellectual property, but this is ridiculous.
Because honestly, if I'm working at Nintendo corporate and I'm an executive, and I'm seeing people wanting to start their own grassroots Super Smash Brothers tournaments, whatever kind of Nintendo tournaments they want to start, as long as they are not bashing the game, as long as they are doing good service, I don't care, because you know what? That gets more people who are interested in the game, get people to buy the game, and then keeps our name in people's mouth at all times. Yeah. But when you're having Nintendo going after small organizations that basically say, oh, well, you can't do this, you can't do that, it puts a very negative tone in my negative taste in my mouth against Nintendo. And I actually believe that one of the top ranked players in the world actually tweeted. He says, yes, it is that time of the year where Nintendo remembers to ruin the day of every Smash player.
Yep. And what's really funny in a non-ironic sort of way is we covered this a long time ago on another podcast episode, but back in 2020, there was supposed to be a Super Smash Brothers esports kind of league or organization that was going to be run by this entity known as Panda Global. And that basically went up in flames because the Panda Global company turned out to be pretty nefarious. And there was just a lot of toxicity is what I'll say between Nintendo and this company. And eventually, you know, they just tossed it entirely. So I think it's funny that now Nintendo's just like, well, now nobody can have anything.
I mean, if that's what they want to do, and I appreciate some of the organizers of these tournaments saying, well, we're still going to do what we want to do, let Nintendo send their lawyers. But my thing is, Nintendo will send their lawyers.
Yes, they will. And they've done this multiple times. And for anybody that is curious, these new guidelines do take into effect November 15th this year. So we'll kind of have to wait and see if they do crack down on people that do run tournaments.
Do you think this is going to... How do I word this? Do you think that this is going to put a lot of tournament organizers off Nintendo entirely going
forward? It depends. So when these rules take into effect November 15th, there's a lot of organizers and groups who do conduct tournaments that, you know, generate a lot of, you know, good camaraderie and good gameplay and good prizes and all that jazz. So if Nintendo goes after those people and shuts those things down, the community will, I mean, for lack of a better word, they will riot. And I think Nintendo will lose a lot of their support.
Yeah.
We got to play the wait and see approach to see how Nintendo responds when these rules go into effect. If they will be, you know, draconian.
It is interesting to see that people just love Nintendo for their Animal Crossing and their Nintendog games, but they will 100% go after you with a lawyer if you go against them in any capacity.
Mm-hmm. What's weird to me is, like, there's other games that they do have esports support, like Splatoon.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why they can support, like, Splatoon but not Smash.
I don't know, because it seems like one of the things that the article says is that basically if you want to run this, you have to be a nonprofit. If you really want to, like, run a tournament, you have to be a small nonprofit. And I don't get the reason as to why. Maybe it's character rights or something. I don't know how that works. I just don't see the reason as to why.
Who knows?
All right. Well,
I was going to do the transition, but you got it.
No. Since we're getting close to Halloween, let's talk some spooky stuff. Now, we might do the quick little thing. We're going to do a little bit out of order. And I do want to talk about how Five Nights at Freddy is out in theaters now.
Yes.
Had we shot this podcast tomorrow, I would have seen Five Nights at Freddy today. However, the reviews are coming out, and they are not good. They are saying this movie's awful.
Yeah, we kind of expected that. Yeah, it's got a 31% right now on Rotten Tomatoes, and roughly a 6 out of 10 on IMDb. IGN, who I don't trust for reviews in the first place, because they're just trash at reviewing stuff. But anyway, they gave it a 4 out of 10.
And one of the things, when I was reading the reviews, one of the things they said is that the movie does not really showcase why the games are scary, why people enjoy the games. They spend so much time building. They spend so much time in the movie building up unnecessary backlog, dialogue, stories, romance. Mm-hmm. It's not needed. Apparently, there's trauma dumping going on. It's not needed. And we'll talk about horror movies in a moment. This goes to my main problem with a lot of horror movies. And Five Nights at Freddy really showcases this. Mm-hmm. You do not need to spend all of your time developing narrative for a horror movie.
No, especially, I was just going to say that, Devin. Like, if you have a horror film, you do not need to spend so much time on, a narrative or character backstory and shit. I mean, obviously you have to build up stakes, but in terms of what you're kind of alluding to with Five Nights at Freddy's, it sounds like they didn't really need to focus so much.
No, I feel like instead of this being a theatrical release that was about 2 hours, give or take, they probably could have made this like a 50-minute Netflix short or whatever.
It sounds like it could have just went straight to streaming.
Yeah, and I think that that's what they should do, because also the Winnie the Pooh horror movie also did not review well. And I'm hoping people start, because I'm sure this movie's going to make money. I think that's going to be the kicker, is like how much money this movie make. But at the same time,
I think it will make its money.
Will it?
I do. I really do. So it's in theaters and it is streaming on Peacock, actually. But I do think it will make its money back, because it has such a abysmal budget of only $20 million. Oh, yeah. They will make that back, because the Five Nights at Freddy fan base is massive. And I do think they will flock to see this film no matter what. Well, I really do.
Well, on our next podcast episode, the thing we'll bring you is we'll bring you the box office numbers over the weekend of how Five Nights at Freddy's did, because I am curious to see if that massive fan base walked into a theater to watch the movie. I don't know. Yeah, we know Taylor Swift people did.
Oh yeah, she's killing it right now.
Literally, she is out there murdering it. Good for Taylor Swift. Congratulations! Yeah, but this is Halloween.
Good on her.
We ain't talking about Taylor today. This is a Halloween episode. Nah.
Yes.
So let's get into some spooky video games. Since we're in the Halloween season, do you find yourself gravitating towards playing like horror games, spooky games? Is that really your thing, or is it like a year-round thing for you?
I try to, especially during the month of October, I do try my best to play, you know, quote unquote spooky games. I haven't done so really this year, but I did last year. For whatever reason, I just didn't get around to it this year. But I do try, normally, to play spooky games.
See, for me, I'm not a big spooky game person, though I have Texas Chainsaw Massacre downloaded. I only download that for other people to play it at my house. That's literally what I downloaded. Like, I don't actually play it.
Uh-huh.
But a game that did come out this month, actually, that I'm probably going to drop the $70 for, Alan Wake 2. That game looks amazing. Mm. I'm super excited. I love the first one. Played the first one. Beat the first one. Love the first one. And the second one's going to be the same. So let's talk about some games that New York Times says are fairly good spooky games to play in this holiday season. And we're going to start out strong with Dead Space. Did you ever play Dead Space? Yes.
I played the original.
Yes.
I did not play the remake yet, but I do have the remake downloaded via Xbox Game Pass. And I really need to play the remake. Because I enjoyed the original.
I played the original, and to this day, I will say, Dead Space is probably the scariest game that I have played to this day.
Really?
I was terrified. That's the reason, actually, I never finished Dead Space. Believe it or not, I usually 100% most games. Dead Space was the one game where I actually did not finish. And I equated it to eating. I equated it to eating spicy food. I might have mentioned this before. It just got, as you eat, it gets spicier and spicier. As you play, it gets scarier and scarier. And I got to a point where I was like, I'm no longer having fun playing this. Phenomenal game. I think that horror games will do much better on the fear factor than horror movies will. But I think Dead Space is an absolute prime example of what a horror game should be. And something that does it really well.
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't say it's like the scariest game that I've ever played in my history of gaming, but it's definitely up there. And I would say it's one of the best, if not the best, modern examples of horror.
Yes, absolutely. Let's move on to our next game, which was a game that Chris recommended to us. iChameleon recommended a game called Death's Door to both Mason and I. I played it. I beat it. I love this game. Mm-hmm.
It's not scary, but it's a really good game.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's not scary, but I do think that it does sit in like the spooky season. You play as a crow. You're dealing with like Death's Door. It's very Halloween vibes. Fantastic game. Difficult. Very, very difficult game. More difficult for me because I played using an umbrella.
Yeah, I remember that.
But if you have the opportunity to play Death's Door, I think I actually gave this game a very high rating. Because I thought it was a great game. I thought it was a great little indie game.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely not like a scary game, but since it's kind of around that theme of Halloween, it's definitely worth playing this time of year.
Absolutely. Now let's move on to the next one, which is a game I've actually never played. The New York Times recommends System Shock, the 2023 version of System Shock.
That is a very scary game.
You've played it?
I played I think that there was an original version that I played in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, because I think this is the one that came out this year is a remake.
Okay, yeah, because I played the original one when I was a kid, and it scared the living shit out of me when I was younger, but I never played the remake.
Well, the remake is currently out now, and it is number 3 on the recommended list. The next one I think is kind of cute. This one makes sense. Animal Crossing's New Horizon. It's got a Halloween October theme. I do kind of like that
stuff. Yeah, so But I disagree with this being a quote-unquote spooky game. It's like a comfy sort of chill vibe.
Yeah, you're right. It's not spooky, but I get what they're going for. Like, if you're like 8 years old and you're playing Animal Crossing and they have a pumpkin, oh, spooky. I get it. But you're right. Mm-hmm. It's not really a spooky game. But this is one I probably... Would I recommend this game for Halloween? Probably not, actually. But I think it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. I do too. I mean, I appreciate that they do these sort of things in Animal Crossing, but I can't like safely recommend this for if you want like a spooky vibe.
I will say the next game I absolutely can recommend for a spooky vibe, Soma. S-O-M-A.
Oh, yes. Yes.
This game is uncomfortably like scary. Like this is one where I don't like this.
Yeah, I've never played this, but I've heard it. I've heard about it.
I've watched this game being played, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not gonna play this one. I'm not gonna. I'd rather watch somebody else play this than me play it. So this one is an absolute terrifying game. If you are familiar with the Amnesia franchise, it's like that same vein. Okay, but mm-hmm. The only difference is. It's basically underwater. That's really the okay. major difference. The next game on the list, hands down, obviously, of course, Resident Evil 4. Yes. What even needs to be said? But I am surprised.
Resident Evil is probably I would say, in the top five of like best horror video game. In my opinion.
I would agree.
I think it's in the top five.
But I'm surprised they gave Resident Evil 4 and not Village or Biohazard. Which seems to me...
I mean, 4 is way better.
I mean, it's a better game, but when I'm thinking like Halloween season, I would probably put Resident Evil Village or the one before that, when they're in the house, as like the spooky game I would recommend.
See, I think they did 4 because it just came out. In terms of the remaster.
That's fair. The next one on this list is the Disney Dreamlight Valley. I've never played this. It looks fun. I don't know.
Yeah. If you have children, sure. Let them play it. But like anybody else, I'm going to have to pass. It's just it's a comfy game.
Well, you know what? Sometimes I saw a post and it was like, just an FYI, when I say that I want to see a Halloween movie or on Halloween, I am not talking about The Exorcist. I am talking about Halloween Town. And I guess that's where that Disney Dreamlight kind of sits. It was a great movie. But I will say Halloween Town 2 and 3 were awful. Halloween Town 1, OG.
Yes, they were. Unfortunately, the sequels were trash.
Yes. So the next thing we do, we bring up to a game I already mentioned, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. When I was watching this game being played, and I was, as we were like doing the introduction, I'm like, man, this game has a lot of rules, way too many rules, but this is a very scary game, I will say. I was like holding my breath in some parts. And I believe this one's also on Game Pass now.
Yes, it is.
The next one is Dredge. I have heard of Dredge.
I have as well. I wouldn't say it's scary, though.
No, because it's mostly just a fishing simulator type game. But apparently there might have been like an update, or I guess this might even be a part of the game, where there's Lovecraftian nightmares where you have to like worry about Cthulhu or whatever. I don't know if I would play this month. I don't know if this would be like my Halloween type game.
No.
Weirdly, when I think about this game, for some reason, the month of March comes to mind. The next game is Obelisk. I have never heard of this.
Never heard of it. Yeah, never heard of this. It looks like another kind of children's game. So if you have, smaller kids that are probably age 7 to like 10, maybe, they would probably enjoy this.
Basically, because both you and I have never played this or even heard of it. New York Times snippet. Obelisk is one of our favorite cozy games about collecting creatures by winning turn-based dance battles. That's why I don't play it.
Oh, shit.
And this month, you can update the game to enjoy a special Halloween-themed event. Okay, well, yeah. All right, I get it. This one seems like a personal choice. But moving on down, we get to Back 4 Blood, which Left 4 Dead, Back 4 Blood sequel, that's all it was. Back 4 Blood, Left 4 Dead. But Back 4 Blood did not do as well as Left 4 Dead did.
No, it did not, unfortunately.
Do you think it's because, like, at the time when Left 4 Dead came out, it was like a new thing, and then when Back 4 Blood came out years and years later, it was already kind of like, we've already done this.
So I think with, I've played Back 4 Blood, and it, to me, it doesn't give off like the same vibe as Left 4 Dead. Like there are cool elements in the game, but I'm not like the biggest fan of the, I guess the random, the randomness of the game in terms of like the card system.
Yeah.
But like, so it's fine. It's a serviceable spiritual successor for Left 4 Dead. I just wish they actually made a true like Left 4 Dead 3.
That would be nice, but you're going to keep on hoping and that will never happen.
No, I know. I know it won't, unfortunately, because I used to play the shit out of both of those games, like do LAN parties, like make them into drinking games. Like it's just a really fun, like couch co-op game back in the day.
It really is. Though it only played four people, you had a room full of 10. All right, whoever dies first is out, pass up the controller.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Like, it was still a lot of fun. Oh, yeah. And it makes for a good time.
It does. The next game on this list is one that is called The Room. I am not familiar with this.
And we're not talking about Tommy Wiseau's The Room.
Oh, God. I knew you were going to say that. Have you heard of this game? Have you heard of this?
I've never heard of it. It's like, what's the line in the movie? I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
I did not. Oh, hi, Mark. The movie is so dumb.
Oh, hi, Mark.
But it's a cult.
The movie's, it's fun. It's fun to watch because you just love to make fun of it.
Yes, but going back to the game, in the room, you're presented with a wooden box. In the room, you're presented with a wooden box that literally and figuratively unfolds into a beguiling puzzle. Solving it depends on finding hidden buttons and missing pieces while making sense of each new puzzle box. The further you go, the weirder things become, culminating in the game's cosmic horror-tinged climax. But it's never truly frightening and maintains an enjoyable spooky vibe throughout. The game has a coziness to it. The warm wood and the satisfying clicks and creaks of the devious mechanisms are as enjoyable as completing each box. The Room isn't a long game, and you probably want to move on quickly to the other games in the series. So it seems like, all right, this is a fun little game. You have like maybe like a couple hours you need to play something with.
Mm-hmm.
But the next game on this list is one I've been recommended this game 1,001 times.
I have as well.
On PS5, on PlayStation and Xbox, I've been recommended. I have yet to play it, and we're talking about The Quarry. If you are a listener, you know The Quarry. You're probably like, how have you never played The Quarry? Never got around to it. But looked epic. Never played it. Perfect Halloween game. And if you're not familiar with what The Quarry is, The Quarry follows a group of teenage counselors who are alone in the woods on the last night of summer camp. And it plays like a choose-your-own-adventure horror flick. Most of the game is spent in cutscenes similar to like Heavy Rain and Polyphony Dreams or whatever. With dialogue options to determine how the story will pan out, and it's cinematically thrilling. The characters are emotive, and the voice acting is excellent thanks to a loaded cast of stars such as David Arquette and Lance Henriksen. The gameplay is pretty hands-off, aside from some basic movements and quick-time events, making it one of the most approachable entities for horror fans of all skill levels. So it seems like it's an easy game to play, considering you're just watching a movie.
Yeah, and I would say before we move on to our next topic, some honorable mentions, in my opinion, that should be on this list include Silent Hill, for one.
Absolutely.
I don't know how you make a best video or best scary video games to play and not include Silent Hill. One of the most scariest games that I personally have played and will recommend to anybody is Fatal Frame. I highly recommend. Play it at night, at midnight, with all the lights off. You will be scared shitless. A phenomenal game. That should have been on the list. Some other notable mentions. I would argue BioShock, actually, should be on this list.
I would probably argue against BioShock.
The first one. I would say the first one.
The first one definitely has spooky vibes. But I would say I would probably put Silent Hill before I would put BioShock. But then I also thought about why Silent Hill isn't on this list. Silent Hill hasn't had a good game in quite a while.
No, it hasn't. So, and that's that probably why it's not on here.
Yeah, because none of these games on this list are bad games.
Yeah, there's another game that came out way back in the day that I enjoyed and played. I think I did play all of the installments of it, but there's this shooter game called Fear.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever heard about it, but I used to play that a lot. And that should be an honorable mention. Granted, it hasn't had a new entry in quite some time, but figure I'd mention it.
It's a dead franchise, unfortunately, but I appreciate the mention it either way. So we talked about video games that you should be playing this season if you're in the Halloween spirit. Now let's talk about some movies. One of my favorite activities to do in the Halloween season is to make a thing of popcorn and put on a spooky, either a scary movie, a spooky movie, or just a Halloween theme movie. Now, Game Radar went ahead and they put in the best horror movies of all time. And we're going to give you their top 10 list. And we're going to say whether we agree with it, whether we've seen it, and whether we would put this on this movie on the list. So starting out at number 10, they put the 2018's Hereditary. I hated this movie.
I did as well. I heavily disagree with this being in the top 10. I disagree with this movie being in the top 50, which is, top 30, which is what this list is. I do not think this movie belongs here.
I don't either, but I think that one is one of those films where it was just so much social media and there was so much like, oh, this is the scariest movie of all time. There was so much of that going on at the time that everybody went out and seen it and they're like, oh, it's so terrifying. You don't know what's going to happen next. But when you look at it as just an actual movie, it was just a bad movie. Like people are just like, oh, people were, you know what, Mason, do you know what I hate? You know what I hate? Whenever someone says, oh, people are passing out in the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're not. They didn't have enough sugar in their diet. They fell asleep. They're not passing out. Nobody's ever been like, oh, nobody's ever fainted in a theater, actually. Like maybe if this was like 1974 and like The Exorcist is out or Texas Chainsaw Massacre is out, maybe. But in 2018, people are passing out in theaters. No. That's not true. No. Just getting people on their butts and seats. So the Hereditary, both of you and I agree, this should not be top 10.
Yeah, should not be top 10 or even in the list of 30 best horror movies of all time. Game Radar,
agree.
You can do better. Come on, man. Come on, Game Radar.
I will say they do better on number 9, and that is the 1996 Scream. I think this is 100% should be on this list. This redefined the slasher genre.
Yep, and I heavily agree with it being in the top 10 of like best movies of all time because, like you said, it reinvented slasher movies.
Now, I will say, Scream has not been the most consistent series of movies.
No,
but I will say no. The most recent ones, I think, have been good. The middle ones, a little bit. But I will say the original Scream 100% should be on a top 10 list because it did bring horror back into the 90s. Mm. I think Scream is a perfect choice.
Yes, I very much agree with this and some very good casting.
Yes, 100%. Now, number 8 is the 1975 Jaws film.
Yep, which I agree it deserves to be on the list. Granted, I personally don't think it is a scary movie, but
thank you.
I don't think it deserves to be classified as a horror film, but who knows? Maybe you disagreed. I mean, do you think it is technically a horror film?
See, the problem is if we saw this movie in the 1970s, we probably would say, oh, this movie's terrifying. Mm-hmm. But because we live in 2023, or if you're listening to this episode in 2024, whatever, I would never classify this as a horror movie. I would say this is a suspense. I would say this is a thriller, if anything.
Yeah, suspense thriller.
Yeah, but I wouldn't put this as a horror movie. So best horror movie of all time, the fact that Jaws is number 8, I'm going to disagree. I don't think it should be this high. Great movie. Don't get that part twisted. But I don't think it's a horror movie and should be in the top 30.
Yeah, I think I'm inclined to agree with you. Once again, I think it's a phenomenal film. It deserves to be heralded as a very iconic and transformative movie because it really changed the rules when it came to prosthetics. And I think this really paved the way for like Jurassic Park in terms of like the scope of quote unquote monsters, which, you know, Jurassic Park was also directed by Steven Spielberg. So there you go.
Honestly, I would probably put Jaws in a more of a category of like top 10 monster movies, because this one,
yes,
you could arguably make a point to Jaws as being like an example of the monster movie genre.
Yeah, I would say this is more of a monster movie film, 100%, and I would argue that Jaws is in the top 5 of, you know, most iconic, you know, monsters in film.
I could see that argument. I don't know if I would necessarily agree, but we can talk about that on a different time.
Yeah. So yeah, for sure.
Let's move down to a Japanese film from 1998 titled Rengu, or
you might
know the American, or I might know the American version as The Ring, but this is the Japanese version.
Yes. Have you seen the Japanese version?
I have not. I'm going to defer this one to you.
Yes. So I have seen both of them. I've seen both the Japanese and English versions of The Ring. I've even seen both of the sequels of each, you know, English and Japanese. The Japanese version is a lot better than the English one, because the acting in the English one isn't the best, and the writing is also lacking. The Japanese version does a better job at fleshing out the story of the young girl Sadako, who, you know, is basically the icon in the film. And when this movie came out, it scared the fucking shit out of me, excuse my language. And everybody and their mom would like dress up as this for like Halloween to like scare people, and boy oh boy did it work. Just something about this young girl with the hair in front, dressed all in white and doing like the creepy crawly out of the TV, and it's like, whew. And even though this movie has aged because it uses, you know, VHS tapes, you know, I'm dating myself. Shout out to those listening who know what a VHS is. But even though this movie is dated, it's still very scary. And I agree, it deserves to be in the top 10, 100%.
All right. And because of its influence on horror movies, I absolutely would agree this deserves to be in the top 10 as well. Number 6 is the 1999 Blair Witch Project. And I 100% agree, this movie was terrifying when it came out. I found this movie.
Yes.
I could not watch this movie all the way through the first time.
Yeah. So I watched this when it first came out, and I was very scared of it, because this was kind of like, it wasn't the first one, but I would argue it's the progenitor of found footage film. It's not the first one of found footage. No, it's not the first thing to try this idea, but I would argue that the Blair Witch Project is the most iconic, or it kind of was the first viral, you know, found footage film that came out, obviously the second one being Paranormal Activity, but Blair Witch really paved the way for other found footage. And when this came out during the time period in which we grew up, you know, not many movies did what this movie did.
Absolutely. 100% agree. At the marketing campaign for this at the time was so much hype that people walked in theaters, and they said that some people actually believe that this actually happened. But I'm a skeptic on the highest order. But when you watch it, from what I remember reading about this film, the director did not tell them certain things. Like, there's a scene where the girl has the camera up close and she's like got snot coming out her nose.
Yeah.
She's actually lost in the woods, and she legit does not know what's going on.
Yep.
And that asks that fear factor. And I think this is, I agree, this is a film that should be definitely in the top 10.
I agree. I 100% agree.
So let's move on to number five, the 1991 Silence of the Lambs.
Yes. I do 100% agree that this movie deserves to be in the top 10.
Yeah, and also, fun fact for you, did you know this is the only horror movie to be ever nominated for a Best Picture?
I did not know that.
Yep, the Silence of the Lambs is the only horror movie. I think it did win Best Picture.
Yeah, it won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, and Best Adapted Screenplay.
With that being said, I'm surprised the movie's not number one.
Yeah, wow. I mean, it doesn't deserve to be number one, in my opinion, but it is definitely deserving to be in the top five where it's at. I mean, Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal Lecter is just so chilling and very, absolutely, very scary. So
he did a phenomenal job. Yeah, this is a fantastic film.
Oh, I was gonna say, like, I mean, everybody knows the iconic line of, "No, hello, Clarice."
Hello, Clarice.
Yes, it's so nice to see you again. He did such a phenomenal job.
Mm-hmm. I definitely could see this being up there. Let's move over to number four, which is another film I can see, the 1980 versions of The Shining.
Yes.
Yeah, this one makes sense. This one tracks. Yeah. I actually never seen The Shining. I actually saw a doctor.
Really?
I saw Dr. Sleep. Yeah, but I never saw The Shining.
You should watch it. Seriously, you should watch it. It's good and it holds up.
I'm sure it does. Believe it or not, real quick sidebar. When I was in Portland, Oregon, it was either shot there or was based out of this resort that's just outside of Portland. And I actually had the opportunity to attempt to go visit it.
Oh, really?
The reason I say attempt is because it was a major snowstorm and we actually got stuck halfway up the mountain in a major blizzard.
That's actually kind of funny because that is one of the plot points in the movie.
Yeah, and I absolutely could see because it's actually sitting on top of a mountain. And had we gone all the way up there, we would have been stuck at the Shining Hill Resort. And that would have been one hell of a story.
Yeah, but I agree that The Shining deserves to be on here. Personally, like, I don't find the movie scary, but that doesn't mean it's not a phenomenal movie.
Yep, I would say that this is definitely one that is in pop culture for horror. So yeah, yes. I'm going to give this absolutely. Yeah. Number three is the 1982 The Thing.
Yeah.
Now, I agree that The Thing should be in the top 10, but did the thing really have a big impact culturally, or did it just kind of exist in its own real bubble?
So, like, I don't think it had a big effect culturally, but in terms of what it did in regards to practical effects, I do think the movie really set itself apart as a horror film, you know, with those effects.
I could see it. Again, I have to always go back to the time. This was the 1980s, and the effects were top-notch. But overall, as like a film, we don't really talk about The Thing in 2023.
No. But it's still... I do think it deserves to be in the top 10 in terms of like horror films, because it is kind of scary because it's very similar to that of the film Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where I don't know if you're familiar with that film, but basically the whole concept is like there's this infection that targets people and you don't know who's infected and who's not, because for all intents and purposes they act normal,
right?
But there comes a time where they basically kind of do what the characters do in like what's that game where it's all about Among Us, where it's Among Us is basically like The Thing more or less, because once the infected entity gets you by yourself, you are most likely going to die and or get infected yourself.
Right, right, right. Well, I guess I could see it.
But now, yeah, let's move on to I was going to say, before we move on to number two, if you want a movie to watch, highly recommend Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the one from the 1970s. I believe it was 1978 with Donald Sutherland.
Oh, good cast then.
Yes, highly recommend.
All right, now number two is your favorite movie, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974.
So
how do you feel about this? I know how I feel. How do you feel?
So it's no secret. I have a hot take when it comes to this film. I think this is a bad movie. But I wasn't born in the 70s, so I don't really have a frame of reference. I have a modern day perspective when looking at this film. I think it deserves to be in the top 10 of best horror because of its impact. I find personally this movie boring. I think it drags on. I don't really think it really stands the test of time, but I appreciate and recognize its impact on society and horror as a genre. So with that being said, I do think it does deserve to be on this list. I just personally don't think it's a good film.
Do you think it deserves to be number two?
No.
Okay. All right. Not moving at on all. To number, moving on to
you,
number.
What do you think?
No, I would not say so either, because I think that there was other films such as Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, that probably, I probably would put Scream even higher than this. But I guess if you're looking at the time, yeah, I guess this makes sense. But I personally would not have put it number two. Number one, I absolutely would have put it number one. The best horror movie of all time, by Games Radar, they say is the original 1973 The Exorcist.
I 100% agree, because this personally is my number one on my own list. This is my number one.
This will be my number one as well. I think this movie changed the Okay, I'll say it like this: this movie changed the dynamic of cinema, for one, and this movie set the standard for horror, which never broke. They've been trying to remake The Exorcist since then, trying to bring back that same level here.
And they have not caught that lightning in the bottle again.
This is a movie that only could happen one time, and that one time is when it happened. It's still pop culture relevant. People still quote it. People still spoof it. There cannot be a better horror movie of all time than The Exorcist.
Yeah, and I've got a very brief, I may have said this on the podcast before, but I have a very brief story about this movie in particular in my first time watching it. So, yeah, I don't know if I've shared this before, but when I was 10 years old, that's when I first saw this film, and it absolutely traumatized me because my dad thought it would be a really good idea for us to watch it. And so we put it on, and basically when she starts getting possessed and starts exhibiting the signs of possession by this demonic entity is when it really started to affect me. And the part that made me kind of move away from the couch in which we were watching it, I got so scared at the scene where she crawls down the steps backwards and then throws up. I got so terrified by that scene that I kind of scooted and scuttled away from the couch and moved to the dining room table or kitchen table. And I hid behind a Cap'n Crunch cereal box.
Aw, Mason.
That movie scared the shit out of me, dude.
There was, for me, real quick before we call it a day, there was two films that absolutely messed with me as a child. One was the original Candyman. That movie,
okay.
I did not care for bees when I was a kid. and seeing he had a mouthful of bees, I was like, I'm out. Mm-hmm. I am 100% out. And then the second one, which changed my life, and it actually, if I ever have children, I can point to this film being a reason why I won't do something. And that was Darkness Falls.
Oh my God, yes! I love that fucking movie!
After I saw that movie by accident, I was just on my mom's floor while she was watching a movie. I sat there and I watched it. After watching that movie, I never put it, and I was like eight. I never put a tooth underneath a pillow again, and I will not do it for my children.
Honestly, the movie still holds up. It really does.
Like, and it's PG-13.
Yeah, and it does a really good job at scaring you for being a PG-13 movie. Honestly, it really does. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
Highly underrated horror film. If you haven't seen Darkness Falls, you should 100% watch it if you like spooky things. Very good movie.
5 out of 5.
Yep, definitely.
All right, Mason, you have any final thoughts before we give our sign-offs?
Just final thoughts on that top 10 list. Like you mentioned, I do think in terms of top 10 movies, I do believe Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street should have been included, possibly even Halloween. But, you know, it is what it is. So those are my parting thoughts.
And I agree with that parting thought. Well, I have been one of your co-hosts. You know me as Darkness Tiger, also known as Devin. If you like what we do here at the Uninformed Gamers page, be sure to give us a follow on either TikTok or Twitter. Be sure to give us a like and a subscribe wherever you may listen to our podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you would like to connect with me directly or even game with me, I am Darkness Tiger on Xbox and Darkness Tiger 2 on PS5. All right, Mason, go ahead and give your sign-offs.
Well, as always, I've been Mason or Rad Dreams from Rad Dreams Review on YouTube or Rad_Dreams on Twitch. Feel free to give me a follow there. I'm going to be gaming a lot more on Twitch. Finally fixed a lot of my setup issues, so expect more content there. And if you like our podcast, feel free to share it with just one person, and it would really help us out. So appreciate it.
All right. Thank you all. We will see you next time. Bye.
Later.